Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari.
Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari.
Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Gopi jana valava kirivara dhari
jana valava
Gopi jana valava kirivara dhari Shodanandana Rajajana Ranjana Shodanandana Rajajana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Vanachari Yamuna Tira Vanachari Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari
Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari
Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Gopi Jana Vallabha Girivara Dhari
Gopi Jana Vallabha
Gopi jana vallabha girivara dhari
Gopi jana vallabha girivara
dhari Yashoda nandana vraja jana ranjana
Yashoda
nandana Raja Jana Ranjana Raja Jana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Vanachari Yamuna Tira Vanachari Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari
Jai Radha
Madhava Kunja Vihari
Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari
Sayam Vishnupada Paramahansa Parivrajaka Acharya Stotara Satasi Srimadisi Bhakti Vedanta Swaman Prabhupada Ki Jai ISKCON Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Sayam Vishnupada Paramahansa Parivrajaka Acharya Stotara Satasi Srimad Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur Ki Jai Anantakoti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jai Dhammacharya Sila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai Prem Sikahu Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Siddhaita Gadadhar Sivasadi Gaur Bhaktivinda Ki Jai Sri Sri Radha Krishna Go Gopinatha Shama Kunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhan Ki Jai Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai Mayapur Dham Ki Jai Jagannath Swami Ki Jai Ganga Mayi Ki Jai Jamuna Mayi Ki Jai Tulsi Devi Ki Jai, Bhakti Devi Ki Jai, Samaveta Bhakti Vrinda Ki Jai. All glories of the assembled devotees. Gaur Premanandi Hari Hari Bol. Which?
Maybe I'll give you a higher table so that it's easier to access this. In the blue tab is Sri Namastika. And what we ordinarily do is we call and response the Sanskrit of it, and then we read the English together.
Okay. Oh, that's good. Yeah, we don't need the book holder. So, Sri Namastika by Sri Rupa Goswami. Nikila Shuti Mahudi Ratnamala. Dyuti Nirajita Pada Pankajanta. Ai Mukta Kulai Rupasya Mana. Paritas Tvam Hari Nama Sanshayami. Harinam. The tips of the toes are constantly being worshipped by the glowing radiance.
From the string of gems known as the Upanishad, the crown handles of all the Vedas. You are eternally adored by liberated souls like Narada and Shukadeva. Oh, Harinam, I take complete shelter of you.
Jaya Namadeya Muni Brinda Gaya He. Janaranjanaya Paramaksharakrite. Tvamanadarada Pimanagudiritam. Nikilo Gratapa Pataling Vilumpasi. O Harinam. Jarabaso Pudyan Kavalita Bhava Dvanta Vibhavo.
Jarabaso Pudyan Kavalita Bhava Dvanta Vibhavo.
Drisham Tattan Dhanam Api Dishati Bhakti Pranayini. Janastasyo Dattam Jagati Bhagavanama Tarane.
Janastasyo Dattam Jagati Bhagavanama Tarane.
Kratite Nirvaktum Kaiha Mahimanam Prabhavati. O son of the holy name, Jad Brahma Sakshad Kriti Nishtayapi. Vinashamayati Binana Bhogai. Apaiti Namas Puranena Tate. Prarabdha Karmeti Virauti Vedaha.
But that when he manifests in one's consciousness, all harm at once disappears.
Agadamana Jashodanandana Nandana Nandasuno. There actually should be a hyphen between Aga and Damana. Those are two separate words. Kamala and also between Kamala and Nayana. I don't know why they left those out. Kamala and Nayana should have a hyphen.
Like, they're being presented as different names of Krishna. But still, they should have hyphens.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think so. It'd be a lot easier to read. Agadamana Jashodanandana. Oh, we did that. Kamala Nayana Gopi Chandra Vrindavanendra.
Kamala Nayana Gopi Chandra Vrindavanendra.
Pranata Karuna Krishna Viti Aneka Sarupe. There's another mistake. Pranata and the synonyms, Pranata Karuna, of course, the worshipper, and then also Krishnat, where in the verse it's Krishnau, not Krishnat. It's another mistake. Tvayi mamara tiru chai vardatang namadeya. O holy name,
you have many forms, such as Prashoda, Asura, Yashoda Nanda, and Arjanchaya Yashoda, Nanda Sunam, Sanabanda, Amaradaya, Narvasayana, Gopi Chandra, Murti Gopi, Vrindavan, and Vrindavana, Pranakaraguna, you who are suitable to surrender us all, and Krishna. I pray that my love for you in many forms may greatly increase.
Vacham vachakamityudeti bhavato nama sarupadvayam.
Vacham vachakamityudeti bhavato nama sarupadvayam.
Purvasmat parameva hanta karunang tatrapi jani mahe.
Purvasmat parameva hanta karunang tatrapi jani mahe.
Jastasmin vihita paradha. Nibahak prani samantad bhavet.
Yastasmin vitaradha prani samantad bhavet.
Asyena idam upasya sopihi sadanandam buddhau majjati.
Asyena idam upasya sopihi sadanandam buddhau majjati.
Holy name.
You manifest two forms, the supreme person you designate.
A translation, the supreme person you designate. Yeah, vacha means that which is to be described or stated. Anyway, it's translation is a little. Do you know who translates?
I don't. I don't know where this came from.
Anyway, whatever it won't. Sudita Srita Janarti Rashaye.
Sudita Srita Janarti Rashaye.
Ramya Chid Gana Sukha Sarupine.
Ramya Chid Gana Sukha Sarupine.
Nama Gokula Mahotsavayate.
Nama Gokula Mahotsavayate.
Krishna Purna Vapushe Namo Namaha.
Krishna Purna Vapushe Namo Namaha.
O holy name, you destroy the many sufferings of those who take shelter of you. You are the very form of concentrated spiritual bliss, the effective law of angels of Gokula, and the perfect and complete form of Lord Krishna.
Narada Bino Jivana.
Narada Bino Jivana.
Sudhormi Niryasa Madhuri Pura.
Sudhormi Niryasa Madhuri Pura.
The synonyms are that Nirjasa in essence began the second line, the synonyms?
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of typos.
Yeah. Twang Krishna Nama Kamang Spurave Rasane Rasena Sada. O enlivener of Narda's Veena.
O holy name of Lord Krishna, please forever manifest on my tongue all knowledge that he speaks.
Very good.
Any comments on any of this? Please comment.
Well, Krishna in this age appears as his name. So, as nothing is equal to or greater than Krishna, nothing can be equal to or greater than the name because it is Krishna. And Krishna has made himself available. It's his kindness, because if you consider that, for example, other processes in different yugas, meditation, of course, it's very difficult to keep the mind focused for a long period of time. I don't think anyone's very few people are serious candidates for long meditation. And that's why if you see the meditations that are marketed, they say like do 5 minutes a day, or the real heavy duty practitioners maybe do 30 minutes a day. So that's difficult. And also, as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, shucho deshe, in a pure place, viveka, going to a secluded place. So it's very difficult in this stage for various reasons. And then sacrifice, chaitayang yajitomakai, the sacrifice requires so much paraphernalia. So there's so many technical rules and priests, and actually the elaborate sacrifices were quite expensive. They were sort of great state occasions, and so sacrifice is also very elaborate. Requires so much paraphernalia. Deity worship, of course, we know we do that, but it requires a lot of work, paraphernalia, and so on. But if you think of the holy name, it's no moving parts, except your tongue. You could just think it, and there's really no moving. Maybe, the neurons firing or something. But there's some physiological thing going on, even when we're thinking. But in general, the holy name is completely portable. Very lightweight. You pay more for a computer if it's really light, so the holy name actually doesn't weigh anything. And it never breaks. It's ingenious, actually. Very clever of Krishna to come as his holy name. It's a process which is especially appropriate and practical in this bizarre age that we live in. And actually, if you study world religions, what you'll find is that practically throughout the world religions there is recognition or glorification of the holy name. One simple example which I've given many times is that in the Old Testament, when the first great temple was built in Jerusalem, it said that it was actually a temple to the holy name. That as God lives in heaven, so the name of God lives in the temple. So it was actually a temple to the name. And we could talk about different devotional forms of Buddhism, or even in the Christian or Catholic circles, the holy name. So, the Hebrew, I just happen to remember that one Hebrew prayer, Baruch Shem Kavod, Malchu Tole Olam Ve'ed, blessed is the holy name of God forever and ever. So, the importance of God's name, the fact that Krishna is fully present in his name is something which really occurred to devoted souls and mystics throughout history. In fact, it's interesting, there's a Platonic dialogue in which, what's the name of that one? I forgot the name. Anyway, in which Socrates is raises, or someone raises the question after they talk about whether Greek words for a particular object bear a special relationship to that object, like the Greek word for table or chair. Does it somehow embody in sound the essence of that object? And of course, the Greeks were very Greco-centric, you could say. The Greek word for barbarian is also the Greek word for foreigner. So, but in any case, it's people have been curious about this, like what is the relationship between the, to use Sanskrit words, nama, nami, the name, and that which is named. And of course, ultimately, Krishna is present in his name, and Lord Chaitanya himself dedicated his second Shikshastaka to glorify the name. Nam Nam Akari Bahudha Nija Sarva Shakti. But Lord Chaitanya said that Nija Sarva Shakti, all of your personal power, and Krishna is all powerful, all of Krishna's personal power has been established in his names. Nam Nam Akari Bahudha, in many ways. So, Krishna is omnipotent. God is all powerful, and He has put omnipotence in the name. So actually, there is omnipotence. There is all power in Krishna's name. Our ability to access that power, or our ability to connect with Krishna, of course, depends. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, "Jayjata mam prapadyante," as people approach me or surrender to me. Literally, approach, prapad, means to approach. As people approach me, tang sitaiva, precisely in that way, tang sitaiva, bhajami aham, I reciprocate. So, what are we, what are we offering Krishna to reciprocate with? So if we, for example, if anyone is ever in a bad mood or unhappy, that ever happens to you in the unlikely event that you have a bad mood one day, then the easiest way to get out of a bad mood is just to remember that, or if you're suffering, just remember that if I don't feel happy right now, that can only mean one thing, that at this moment Krishna is not happy with me. Because if Krishna was happy with me, I'd be happy with myself. As they say in Italian, contento tu, contenti tutti. Which means if you're happy, everybody's happy. And, or in Sanskrit, which is not quite as colorful in this case, perhaps the Italian, contenti tutti, is actually, the verse, it talks about knowledge, not emotions, but jasmin bigate, when God is understood, sarvam evam bigatam bhavati, everything becomes understood. And when Krishna's happy, Krishna, it's like watering the root of the tree. So if you feel that you're drying up, if you don't feel ecstatic, if you don't just like leap out of bed and bounce off your padded, you know, Vaishnav walls, because, you know, they're always just so ecstatic. So if we're not in the best mood, then we have to just like go back to basics. It's like they say, if everything else fails, read the directions. And so if we're feeling a little dry or unhappy, maybe we got to get out our little bhakti watering can and start watering the roots. It's funny because the trap of Maya is that when I feel unhappy, I think, well, how could I make myself happy? That's actually a trick of Maya. Because when I'm unhappy, if I worry about my own happiness, I just deepen my unhappiness, because my unhappiness precisely comes from the fact that I'm forgetting Krishna and thinking too much about myself. So when I feel unhappy and I want to make myself happy, that's like, you know, it's like putting a big kick me sign on you. So, on the other hand, if we're unhappy and we immediately think, well, how can I make Krishna happy? I'm unhappy, which means I have to make Krishna happy. I have to please Krishna by my behavior. And if you just stop for a moment, right, as I say, wake up and smell the kofta. If you just stop for a moment, like time out, take a time out, like, you know, parents love to give their kids time out, so sometimes we have to give ourselves time outs. If you just give yourself a time out and say, okay, let me just focus on pleasing Krishna right now, and that'll do it. As soon as you water the root of the tree, you're good to go. Or it's like putting food in the stomach. So anyway, so in this age, of course, there are 9 devotional processes, and as Prabhupada emphasizes, we can, you know, perform any of them. Also, Krishna says in chapter 12, just think of me, mayiva mana adhatsva, fix your mind in me alone, mayibuddhi niveshaya, devote your intelligence to me. And nivasishasi mayiva, you will dwell in me alone, ata urdvang nisangshaya, from here on, without doubt. So if you like always wanted to have a very prestigious address, if that was one of your goals in life, to, you know, to live in a place where, oh my God, you live there, then Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita that you can live in him. How's that for a prestigious address, you know? I live at 108 Krishna Lane. It's interesting, the word, just like there's a common word in India from Sanskrit, nivasa, right? Residence, dwelling, nivas, like, or just vas, like bridge, vasis, and so on. So nivasa means a residence, a dwelling. Krishna is the dwelling place of the goddess of fortune who's on his chest, therefore he's called Sri Nivas. What? Jagannivas or Jananivas, which in American Sanskrit is Jananivas. But anyway, but Krishna uses the same verb, Nivasa, Nivasishasi, which is the second person plural singular of the verb, meaning that you will dwell, you will live. Nivas, and Krishna says, Mayeva, in me alone. Which means that if we happen to be somewhere where it's too hot or too cold or a dog's barking and, you know, you left your pepper spray somewhere else, then we can remember that simply by taking shelter of Krishna, we can live in him alone. Now, Krishna says, if you can't do this, you can't fix your mind in Krishna alone, you can't devote your intelligence always to Krishna, you can't. And then what do you do? Then Krishna says, practice sadhana bhakti. The sadhana is a somewhat more recent Sanskrit term. The word that Krishna uses in the Gita for sadhana is abhyasa. Abhyasa, literally repetition. So Krishna talks about abhyasa yoga. In other words, yoga practice. Yoga practice. So and then, of course, if we can't do that, then Krishna says, work for me, matkarma padamo bhava. And if you can't do that, I don't know, maybe like work for the United Way or something, or give peas a chance. So, in your diet. But ultimately, of course, how do we come to the higher stages? How do we come to the higher stages of bhakti yoga? There has to be a higher taste, as we always say. We even have a book called The Higher Taste, right? It's one of the slogans of the Hare Krishna movement, The Higher Taste, and so, or the mottos. So we get a higher taste in this age, Harinama. Although there are different processes, really the main process for this age is Harinama. Harinama, 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 Eva Kevalam. Kalo nastyeva, 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 gatir, anyata. The word gati, of course, comes from the Sanskrit root gum, which is not what you chew in Sanskrit, but it's pronounced the same. Gum is just the Sanskrit verb which means to go. And that's, of course, it's obviously cognate with the English verb go. Or German gehen, and so on. This, that word go, it just Sanskrit ga. So from the word go, gati, gati, and which in a sense means progress. In other words, you're moving, you're on the move, you're going forward, gati. So kalo, in this age of Kali, nasti eva, nasti, is not an English person saying nasty. Nasty is, of course, na-asti. The S, by the way, in asti is the same S as in the English word is. And, or the German ist, and so on and so on. So, na-asti eva. Eva, like indeed, is an emphatic word, indeed. Or actually, like there's actually no, there is not, there is actually not, actually, there's actually not, there's actually not. Gati, progress, really moving spiritually, anyata. We can see people that have all kinds of practices. Some of them say bhakti yoga, some of them other practices, but we should be moving. In fact, Rupa Goswami sort of put little tags on all the rungs of the ladder so we can know if we're progressing. Ado Shraddha, in the beginning, faith. Obviously, if you don't believe that something may be beneficial, you wouldn't do it. You wouldn't get out of bed in the morning unless you had some faith that it's better to get out of bed than stay in bed. You wouldn't do anything. Why would anyone do anything intentionally if they didn't believe somehow it was better to do it than not to do it? Or it's better to do this than to do something else. And so in the beginning, shraddha, there's faith, ado shraddha tatak sadhu sangha, then hanging out with the cool Hare Krishna people. Sadhu sangha, and then ado shraddha tatak sadhu sangha, and then bhajana kriya, because if you associate with devotees, guess what you're going to end up doing? Not just watching bad movies, but you're actually going to chant Hare Krishna, you're going to eat prasadam, right? Because if you're with serious devotees and you know, and they eat, guess what you're going to eat? So that's, or chant or dance or what we're doing now. So bhakta sadhu sangha or bhakta sangha naturally leads to bhajana kriya, which literally means devotional activities. And then anartha nibriti sad. If you're doing devotional things, it means you're not doing something else. Unless you're eating out of both sides of your mouth, like one bite of boga, one bite of prasadam. But normally people don't do that. So if you're engaged in devotional activities, then you're not doing those other things. And that, of course, that becomes anartha nibriti, because activities that have no relation to Krishna are anartha. They have no artha. They have no purpose. They have no value. In fact, Krishna says this himself in one of the four essential Bhagavatam slokas in the second canto, where he says, rite artham. Without value. So to say rite artham or anartha, it's the same thing. So without value, jat pratiyeta, that which literally kind of presents itself to us as real. The word jat pratiyeta. It's an interesting word, pratiyeta, but basically, I mean, literally it means that things we come up against, like perceptions or impressions or appearances. So jat pratiyeta, that which presents itself to us as real, is without value. Rite artang jet pratiyeta na pratiyeta, if it does not present itself to us, na pratiyeta chatmani, within the Supreme Soul. If you think something is really nice, but you're not really seeing it within Krishna, you're seeing it apart from Krishna, then that's not good. And if you keep doing it, you'll get a Darwin Award. So, napratiyeta chatmani tadbidyad, know that, atmano mayang, that is the maya illusory energy. Yatha vaso yatha tama, like shadows and darkness and so on. So, seeing something not in Krishna, and then there's another very important Bhagavatam verse, which Prabhupada used to quote, that bhayang viti abhinivesha taksyat. Bhaya, fear. Fear. If you think about it, anxiety, it has long been realized that anxiety is a kind of fear. Because if you had absolutely no fear of anything going wrong, what would you be in anxiety about? Like, oh my God, I'm not going to make that light. Or, which is, you know, sign of Rajaguna working beautifully. Or, you know, something bad is going to happen. Even if, you know, it can be something minor like, uh-oh, I think I'm going to get killed right now. Or it can be like, oh, my God, that person beat me to the line, the checkout line. So, but if you think about it, whatever our anxiety is, it's some kind of fear that something is going to happen or not going to happen which won't please me. And yet, if we see everything, and so where does that come from? Where does that come from? Vayam, it comes from absorption in the second. This is what the Bhagavatam says. The second here, meaning the second ordinal number, not like, you know, a measurement of time, but like first, second, third. Dvitiya, right? In Sanskrit, pratamang, first, dvitiya, second, tritiya, etc. So dvitiya, it means the second. And the idea here, what does it mean, absorption in the second? Because there's only one thing, Vasudeva Sarvamiti. There's really only Krishna. And everything else that exists, exists within Krishna, as part of Krishna, one of his energies. So therefore, if I'm in anxiety or if I feel fear, it's because I'm imagining that there's a second reality besides Krishna. There's really only one reality, which is Krishna, with all his different components, moving parts, and, you know, everything, energies. So there's really only Krishna. It's like, imagine you come to a, let's say you come to a dinner and you're really hungry and you think that all the good food's going to be on that side of the table, so you're really anxious to get on that side of the table and kind of like, you know, like bowling over your opponents and so on. But then someone taps you on the shoulder and says, no, you know, all the same food is on this other side of the table too. So it doesn't matter where you sit, it's all the same. So in that sense, if we see that Krishna is everything, then, you know, all these material anxieties just go into the yet box, you know, the whatever. it's all whatever. So you can be a Valley Prabhu and just say, like, whatever. So anyway, so that's the cause of anxiety. And then coming back to these verses we were talking about. So making progress in anartha nivritti. If we become enthusiastic about the devotional activities, then we lose our taste for other activities. For example, if we relish devotee friendship, then friendship with the fruitives, we don't use the K word, right? Politically incorrect. The karmis. If we make real friendship with devotees, then we lose our taste for other friendship. Because, I mean, how can you really be intimate with someone with whom you can't really talk about the things that are most important to you? I mean, the things that you care the most about, the things that are most important to you, and you can't really talk about it. Not a great life. So, anartha nivritti. So then our anarthas. Anyway, so Krishna, so that anartha means things which aren't pleasing to Krishna. And Krishna is not, the good news is Krishna is not a religious fanatic. And he's actually a nice guy in addition to being the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So if we are trying our best, then it'll all work out. Give or take a few births, but so to really understand that anything not with that has no relation to Krishna has no value, and then it's like, why am I doing that? Right? I mean, what if you go to a job and you're working hard, and then, you know, the end of the week comes and the boss says, "Oh, you didn't think I was going to pay you, did you?" So it's it's like, why am I doing this? People sometimes are in relationships and they think, why am I doing this? Right? Or you may want to, you know, get a higher degree in the humanities so you can become a very intellectual taxi driver or something. So we have to come to this realization. We have to come to this realization that there's no use in anything without Krishna. It's not going to make me happy. It doesn't do anything for me. It's sort of like, I don't know, you call it existential junk food or something. You know, it's just like junk food. It's like, yuck. I don't feel good. No nutritional benefit. So, to anartha nivritti syat, and then to toni stop. When I really become convinced, that anything that is not with Krishna, or in Krishna, or for Krishna, or by Krishna, and you can throw in all the other prepositions, anything is that is not really Krishna conscious has no value. And then you become fixed. Nishta. Sta, of course, is just English stand, same word. Or if you know Spanish, estar, like como está. They just put an E in it because they have to sort of take a step back and get up some speed before they do two consonants. So, but even that, like, como está, the está is just Sanskrit está, it's the same word. English, stand, status, state, state of being, and so on. So, and ni means within. So like when you're really standing there, it's like I have this little GPS, and theoretically you're supposed to be able to like turn this wheel, and it like by suction it sticks to this little platform. And it does for about 10 minutes until it comes off. And then, you know, you have like near-death experiences as you're driving at the same time trying to fix it. So the word nishta means that it's like really standing firmly. It's really in there. And so nishta. And which is also sometimes translated idiomatically. If you look at how the word nishta is used in the Gita and the Bhagavatam, sometimes it's translated as a type of faith, in the sense of really like being emotionally committed. You're really standing within something. What there was an old pop song called Stand By Me. So when you really stand by something, that's nishta. Anyway, nishta, ruchi, sata. And so then, if I'm not kind of engaged in self-defeating activities, like I chant and serve to become happy, and then I do something stupid to make myself miserable. So when we stop working against ourselves, and we reach that anartha nivritti nishta platform, then you really get a taste, because you're doing good things and you're not counteracting them or with bad things. And so then you get a taste, ruchi. Ruchi tataha. It's interesting because there's a famous Dhruva story, Rajputra Dhruva, the story of Dhruva, and his father, Uttanapada, had two wives, and their names were almost like titles, because the lady that was really good looking but didn't have such good character, sort of a trophy bride or whatever, was Suruchi. Same word, Ruchi. And Suruchi means very ruchi. So she was like very appealing. But the other woman was Suniti, very wise, very moral, and so on. And so the king, sort of in his youthful weakness, went for the ruchi, not the niti. And of course, Krishna consciousness means that we have to realize the real ruchi, the real taste, is in Krishna. So then ruchi, sattaha, tata, asakti. Asakti. Sakti means attachment. It's actually from the same root as words like sangha. And then asakti, firmly attached. So you can have a taste. It's like, I really like doing this. Like, you know, I'm practicing Krishna consciousness. I'm losing my taste for mundane things. I'm really enjoying this. But then asakti means it's more than I'm having a great time. It's really, there's this attachment where you're so attached to it, you just can't let go of it at all. So you're really attached to it. Something you just can't let go of for anything. And then bhava. bhava, the state where you really begin to experience your original emotions. The soul has emotions. And in fact, emotions come originally from the soul. And when we start to feel our original pure emotions of love for Krishna and all souls, some of course we love at a distance, but when we begin to feel these spiritual emotions, that's bhava. And then prema. And then prema, which simply means you're there. You're experiencing your original, pure, complete love of Krishna. And Rupa Goswami says that this bhavet kramaha, krama comes in the Sanskrit root krum, not referring to a little piece of bread or anything, but krum. The verb krum in Sanskrit means to step or walk. So because Vamana took these great steps, these three great wide steps, he's called Trivikrama. Which to American Vaishnavas is known as Trivikram. But it's actually Udukrama, which means great steps, wide steps. So the same word krama is there. Rupa Goswami gives the same word. And so in Sanskrit, it comes to mean a sequence, like a step-by-step sequence, like these are the steps. And Rupa Goswami says bhavet, which means there must be, or there should be, there must be, there should be, this sequence, these steps, bhavet kramaha. So, that's how we get a higher taste for Krishna consciousness. And if... Hare Krishna. Sorry, all the prasannam's gone. Just kidding. So... If we're bogged down, if we feel that we're not moving, it's like when the air isn't moving, you know, you get like I'm remembering the Portuguese word for some reason, the English word, it's just one of those days where the air is really thick and there's no wind, there's no breeze. Yeah. So, like you know when you're moving. For example, let's say you have some injury or some illness or some pain or weakness because of some health issue. When you start to get better, you feel it. You feel it. You know you're getting better. And this example is given, or actually this example is given in the Bhagavatam that... it's one of those things, you know, I've got to remember the first word, then it all comes. Prapadyamanasya yatashta taksyu tushti putti kshutapayonugasam. Oh, bhakti. Bhakti pareshanu bhavo viraktiranyatra chayishatrika eka kalaha. Prapadyamanasya yatashta taksyu tushti putti kshutapayonugasam. Which means that three things, bhakti, devotion, bhakti pareshanu bhava, which literally means experiencing the Supreme Lord. It's not just this glorious theological category that you like to talk about, but you're actually experiencing Krishna's presence. Para Isha, the Supreme Lord. And Anubhava, experiencing the Supreme Lord. So there's that feeling of devotion, there's the direct experience of the Supreme Lord, and... Virakti, detachment. Virakti anyatra, elsewhere. I'll give you a very literal translation. Virakti anyatra, and detachment elsewhere for other things. So, virakti anyatra cha, esha trika. Literally, this triad, or these three things, trika, these three things. Trika Esha Eka Kala are simultaneous. And the Sanskrit word here for simultaneous is Eka Kala, just at one time, at one moment. So simultaneous. Oh, I want a garland. Aloha? Is that an aloha moment? Thank you. So, So trika, ek, esha, trika, these three things, eka kala, are simultaneous. Prapadyamanasya, which is the obviously continuous present participle. So for those who are approaching Krishna, or those who are surrendering, it's actually the, sort of the continuous present participle, that for those who are surrendering, they're in the process of surrendering, these three things, bhakti, devotion, experience of the Supreme Lord, and I still want to just put it in there. Experience of the Supreme Lord and detachment elsewhere, literally. Detachment elsewhere. These three things come simultaneously for one who is surrendering, for one who is approaching Krishna, just as ashnataha, just as for one who is eating, for one who is eating, yathashataksyu, there must be three things, which are tushti, satisfaction, pushti, nutrition, strength. You know, you're eating, you feel a certain satisfaction, you feel a certain vitality because you're getting strength by eating. So it's tushti and pushti. And kshudapaya, literally hunger going away. Upa means away, and aya is going. Apaya, going away. Hunger going away. So you experience that satisfaction and that vitality or nutrition and hunger going away. So these correspond. So these three things, the Bhagavatam says, they must occur for someone who's actually eating. And these three things occur for the eater, anughasam, with every bite. You know, it's like with every bite, you're feeling more satisfied and more strength. Of course, you can sort of reach a peak and start to go down as you surrender to shameless gluttony. Then, you know, but when someone is hungry and they start to eat, these three things happen. These three things happen. So, but now the word prapad is interesting also. And we'll talk about the word prapad since we're going into all these words. Is that Vivek? Vivek? Hare Krishna. Long time no see. Chirakala Adarshana. So, so the word prapad, which is often the word used in India for surrender, like in, you know, they use the word prapatti in different, you know, like Ramanuja traditions, prapatti, which is just the noun, like bhajan and bhakti, it's just the feminine noun ending in ti. So prapatti, prapadyate, prapanna, which is the past passive participle, like a surrendered soul is prapanna. So what does the word actually mean? The verb pad is the Sanskrit word to go, or one of the many Sanskrit words to go, and that's why you get the word pada, you know, because it's the foot that goes. So the verb pad, from which you get pada, it just means to go, and pra is English forth, pra, forth. So to go forth, in other words, to go toward. It means to approach. In other words, it means to approach. And how does the word to approach come to mean surrender? Well, Prabhupada explained that it's like if you approach the sun, you have to become fire. If you want to approach the sun, you have to agree to be fire. If you're not, you know, if like igniting suddenly could ruin your whole day, then you don't want to go closer to the sun. So in that sense, if you approach Krishna, it's like, uh-oh. Because as you approach Krishna, you can't really bring your material desires. You can't bring all the dirty stuff. You got to sort of, you know, empty your pockets, leave all your contraband, and all the stuff you're trying to smuggle into heaven. As we actually approach Krishna, we've got to give things up, because it's like becoming fire, because otherwise you just can't keep going forward. And another terrible thing that happens when you approach Krishna is that you become decentered. In other words, you're no longer the center. The tendency is a material life that everyone kind of lives in a world in which they star in the movie. Like, life is a movie and I'm the leading character and I get top billing. My name's up on the marquee. So everyone kind of, you know, lives in their own little story in which they are the star of that particular movie. And so there's this self-centeredness, and sometimes they're big enough to let to share top billing with their family. So to surrender to Krishna means that, oh, you mean I'm just like a walk-on in this movie, or I'm just, you know, I play, what do they call it?
Extra.
An extra, what are they called? Not the star, like leading role, and then the
supporting
role. Yeah, there's many words, but like supporting role. So, you know, it's like when they do the credits at the end of the movie, I'm like 5 minutes into the credits, you know, in very small print. So to approach Krishna, otherwise you could just walk into Vaikuntha right now. If you're willing to go, then you can just go. No one's stopping you. Krishna's not stopping us. That's the funny thing. The gates of heaven are actually wide open. But we're like, thanks but no thanks. Or, yeah, I mean, I'll be there in a while. Like, you know, don't wait for me. Just start the party and then I'll get there eventually. Prabhupada always used to say that Krishna is more anxious to have us back in the spiritual world than we are to go. And the gates of heaven are open. You just have to leave your junk at the gate. And we're not really prepared to do that. So that's why the word to approach Krishna, if you really just sort of stay on the path, you keep moving toward Krishna, that means you have to keep giving things up. And at a certain point where, uh-oh, I'm coming out of my sadhana comfort zone. Then at that point, we kind of stop. That's probably enough surrender for now. You know, don't want too much of a good thing. And it's true, you know, I mean, it's true that we do have to sort of be moderate. In fact, Krishna himself says that in the Bhagavad Gita. Yuktahara viharasya, moderate in eating and recreation, by the way. There's actually, recreation is bona fide, you'll be delighted to hear. In moderation, vihara. One time, one sort of very stern, well, at least sannyasi was very stern about these things, was talking to another sannyasi in Mayapur, and this other sannyasi worked with the kids in the Gurukula. And naturally, I mean, they're kids. They have to play sports. They have to play games. And so this sannyasi came and said, I'm very concerned because I heard that you're engaging the kids in frivolous sports. And so Sarasanyasi sannyasi said, oh, no, we don't do any frivolous sports. You don't? He said, oh, no, we take every game very seriously.
We should start the Bhagavatam class.
Oh, we're doing it. Oh, yeah. We've been doing a lot of... Anyway, so this has been a lot of Bhagavatam. So... So of course we don't want to, you know, break our legs or gamble or get passionate and spoil our Krishna consciousness, but just ordinary recreation. For example, if you read the Mahabharata, what you find is that Krishna's devotees had different resort areas. And when the Pandavas were in Indraprastha, which is now the general area of Delhi, on the Jamuna River, there were certain resort areas down by the river. So during the summer, they would just sort of go on vacation down by the river. And it's very interesting because sometimes we mix Vedic and sort of, you know, some things we see in India. But the women, it's specifically described that they were all engaged in different sporting activities, including women wrestling with each other. They were actually having wrestling matches among the women. And they were Kshatriya ladies. And these were young girls that were just kind of, I mean, they weren't thrashing each other or just, you know, mutilating each other. They were just having a friendly wrestling thing. And, of course, we know also from the Mahabharata that Subhadra was expert at driving a war chariot. So, And yet these were very chaste women. So it's, we have to be careful of sort of ahistorical stereotypes about what the possibilities are for women. Anyway, so down in Indraprastha, they had that resort area. And then in Dwarka, they had Rivataka Mountain. That was like their, you know, they went to, that was their resort area. They would go on vacation there. And had, they would actually have programs with entertainment, singers, dancers. It's actually quite modern if you read it. So, but of course Krishna was there, and it was all Krishna conscious. Anyway, the things in moderation, but, so the name, getting back to the name, the nice thing is we're kind of, you know, finding our way back here to the original point, right? I left little breadcrumbs along the way, so no, I'm getting, coming back. So, because Krishna put all his potency in his name, japa is so wonderful. Of course, kirtan is also. But it's interesting because japa, there's a sense in which japa, I think, is a real test. Kirtan has certain, let's say, other inducements. Like, for example, you're with your friends and you get to sing and, you know, in some areas shout and scream and bang pieces of metal together to make sure that it doesn't actually sound like music. But in any case, you know, because people are inclined to sing and dance. People are inclined. There should be like licenses for kartals. You should be have to get a license, and then there should be like a 24-hour cooling off period. If you know, do you really want to play the kartals? Anyway, kirtan involves singing and dancing. Singing and dancing, which we like to do anyway. So there's a lot of dovetailing. You can sing, you can dance, you can, you know, shout and jump up and down and things like that. Play musical instruments with your friends. But japa, you know, it's not song and dance. And it's not social. You can't show off, you know, how well you play a musical instrument, how well you sing, or how high you can jump, or anything like that. It's just... japa is really just you and Krishna. And I think japa is a fantastic thing because it's like our private quality time alone with Krishna. So many of our activities are social. After all, it's the Sankirtan movement. Some, by the way, the SAM, together kirtan, we have it in English still, that SAM. It comes from the Greek as S-Y-N, like synthesis, the together thesis. So the Greek... or symbiotic. And so that S-Y-M or S-Y-N word is actually Sanskrit S-A-M. It's the same word. So Sankirtan. But japa, it's just... I mean, think about it. When you're a kid, if you can really have, like, spend really happy time alone with your mother or father, it's a nice thing when you're a child to really have that time with one of your loving parents. And so it's our private quality time alone with Krishna, in which you can't just sort of get into the music, get into the drum, the rhythm, or, you know, get into the, you know, just become a, you know, get into the dancing, or just kind of like bonding with your buddies and the kirtan and dance, you know, all the stuff people do. There's none of that. It's just you and Krishna. And so it's almost like, you know, Krishna calls you to come to him, and you get there and you say, Krishna, there's no one else here. Like, what are we going to do, just the two of us? Yeah, I think I'm going to go back to my buddies. You know, we're having a really good party right now, but thanks for calling me. And in a sense, you know, that's when we're not attached to japa, that's what it is. Like, there's just Krishna here. So the holy name, we start off with the name. Okay, last sentence, and then we'll get to the other Bhagavatams. We've been quoting a lot of Bhagavatam slokas. This has been a sloka-intense program. But that's the glory of the holy name. Krishna's present in his name. So if you want Krishna, there he is. Yes, now what?
So we're in chapter 11, verse 39, which is the last verse of the chapter.
These are Bhagavatam booklets?
Yeah, you have the... We all have one, so that we can read it along. We're going to have end of the chapter.
Oh, he said the blue book. Oh, the blue book. The actual book. Okay, so where are we? Last one?
65.
Okay. Oh, that's interesting. Tam, oh, let me just do the verse line. Tam me ni re bala mudha. Strainam chanu pratang raha.
Strainam chanu pratang
raha. Apramana bido bhartur.
Apramana bido bhartur.
Ishwarang matayo jatha.
Ishwarang matayo jatha.
Interesting. Tang me ni re bala mudha. Strainam chanu pratang raha. Apramana bido bhartur. Isharang matayo jatha. So I'm just going to go right to the translation. The simple and delicate women truly thought that Lord Sri Krishna, their beloved husband, followed them and was dominated by them. They were unaware of the extent of his glories, of the extent of the glories of their husband, as the atheists are unaware of him as the supreme controller. Purport. Prabhupada's purport. Is this Prabhupada's or what?
First canto.
Even the transcendental wives of Lord Sri Krishna did not know completely the unfathomable glories of the Lord. This ignorance is not mundane because there is some action of the internal potency of the Lord in the exchange of feelings between him and his eternal associates. The Lord exchanges transcendental relations in five ways, as proprietor, master, friend, son, and lover. And in each of these pastimes, he plays fully by the potency of Yoga Maya, the internal potency. He plays exactly like an equal friend with the cowherd boys, or even with friends like Arjuna. He plays exactly like a son in the presence of Yashoda Mata. He plays exactly like a lover in the presence of the cowherd damsels, and like a husband in the presence of the Dwarka queens. Such devotees of the Lord never think of the Lord as supreme, but exactly as a common friend, a pet son, lover, husband, very much dear to heart and soul. That is the relation between the Lord and his transcendental devotees, who act as his associates in the spiritual sky where there are innumerable Vaikuntha planets. When the Lord descends, he does so along with his entourage to display a complete picture of the transcendental world where pure love and devotion for the Lord prevail without any mundane tinge of lording it over the Lord's creation. Such devotees of the Lord are all liberated souls, perfect representations of the marginal or internal potency and complete negation of the influence of the external potency. Lord Krishna's wives were made to forget the immeasurable glories of the Lord by the internal potency, so there might not be any flaw of exchange, and they took it for granted that the Lord was a hen-pecked husband. Think of that term, hen-pecked. Always following them in lonely places. In other words, even the Lord's personal associates do not know him perfectly well. So what do the thesis writers or mental speculators know about the Lord's transcendental glories? The mental speculators present different theses as to his becoming the causes of the creation, ingredients of the creation, or the material and efficient cause of creation. But all this is but partial knowledge about the Lord. Factually, they are as ignorant as the common man. The Lord can be known by the mercy of the Lord only and by no other means. But since the Lord's dealings with his wives are based on pure transcendental love and devotion, the wives are all on the transcendental plane without material contamination. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. So I'm not going to go to 11 o'clock, actually, but so I'm just going to...
It occurs to me that because tomorrow is the appearance day of Lord Vamanadeva, so today there's a fast until noon. So we should go a little. We should go a little late in the lecture, so that because we won't be able to take Rishadam until noon, right? So just keep going. I'm sure we'll have a lot of questions for you after too.
Today is Lord Vamana's appearance day, or tomorrow?
Tomorrow is, but it's Dwadashi. It's Vamana Dwadashi. Right. So today is Ekadashi. Because we have to break fast tomorrow morning, we fast today.
I always wonder about those rituals, because. Just thinking about it, if you have to break a codicil, first of all, you wonder, like, why you have to break a codicil, because some people actually don't eat grains. And they say you have to break it on a certain day. So if, let's say if Ekadasi ends tomorrow at a certain time in the morning, one would assume Ekadasi is only 24 hours, which means you could eat grains up till that time in the morning on the day of Ekadasi. I'm not saying to do this. I just wonder about all these technical rules, which multiplied wonderfully after Prabhupada disappeared. So what this verse says is tam meenire bala mudha. So, you know, sometimes we think the word mudha means ass, but actually technically it means confused. Confused. In fact, Krishna, for example, is called Madana Mohana. He's like the enchanter or confuser of Cupid. And so the word Mohana, which is a positive word generally, is from the same root as the word mudha. It's actually from the same root. So mudha, but tends to mean like confused, bewildered. So here it said the abala. Actually, on average, men have twice the upper body strength as women on average. That's just a little physiological datum. And so one of the words for women, for woman in Sanskrit is abala, not bala, not strong, or not having so much as much physical strength. So that's one of the words, abala. And then, so here they're called abala, which can also be taken positively, like delicate. Prabhupada translates it delicate. So, and mudha. So the women who were sort of confused about Krishna, and which Prabhupada points out, is also because of yoga maya. It's not, they weren't ignorant people. It's the opposite. They were great souls, and they were confused by yoga maya, and they thought that Krishna was just their husband. So, tongue, meni re is from the verb mun to think. They thought, the confused women considered him, tung menire, considered him strinam. Strinam comes from the word stri. Stri is woman, and sort of one who's sort of too attached to women is called strina, from the word stri. So the confused women considered him strina. And anubrata, they thought he was just following them. That he just, you know, he can't live without us, and he's just following us, and so on. Raha, in secluded places. So in secluded places, they felt that he was just devoted to them, that he was following them, that he was very attached to them. That was an interesting one. Apramana bidu, because they did not know, means not, they did not know pramana. The evidence. Actually, the word, pramana means evidence, but it comes from the Sanskrit verb ma, to measure. In fact, like matra means measure. It's the English word metric. Metric, matra, same word. So as the famous ancient sophist Protagoras said, man is the measure of all things, of things that are that they are, of things that are not that they are not. So to be the, and if you think of it, like the typical example of proving something is you measure it. You know, whether it's like football, they bring out the chain, or whether, you know, the various kinds of metrics involved in scientific experiments. So even in ancient India, they had this notion that proving involves measuring. And so therefore, from the verb measure, you have the verb evidence or proof, pramana. And so here, though, it means like sort of in a literal sense, like they didn't know the measure of him, like the measure of a man, like how great a person is. So literally it means they didn't know his measure, which Prabhupada translates, unaware of the extent of glories. Bharatur, they didn't know the measure of their husband. The word Bharatur, of course, in the Sanskrit verb bhar, or like bhara, to maintain. So it's husband's first job is to pay the bills. So, apramana vidho bharatur. Interesting, one of the words for wife is bharya, the one who is to be maintained, the one whose bills you are to pay. So, apramana vidho bharatur, ishwarang matayo jata. And here's the analogy. Matayo is the plural form of the Sanskrit verb mati, just like from the word verb gam, gati, from man, mati. So mati means thought, opinion, and here it has a sense of speculative. So just as the opinions, literally, just as the opinions do not know the Lord, the controller. In other words, the speculative opinions. So here Prabhupada talks about the atheist, but actually, I mean, technically, the word here is actually talking about their views. Their views, their opinions, their matis, their opinions, their speculations do not know the Lord, just as that is the case. So also the wives didn't know Krishna. So any questions on that verse? I mean, there are so many. Yes. Yeah, go ahead. Oh, the talk show format. You got a microphone?
We're being broadcast.
Oh, good.
And also recorded.
Oh, good. So I'll watch what I say.
Maharaj.
Yes.
The last line of the purport, which says that the wives are all on the transcendental plane without material contamination. So, can you elaborate what is the material contamination? And
well, material contamination would be the bodily concept of life. To have a bodily concept and to actually have mundane attachments or material vanity, like I want my husband to be attached to me simply out of pride and vanity. It's all those material emotions and attachments.
But Maharaj, even the emotions of the wives were like that.
Well, but they were spiritual because they were based on pure love of Krishna. And we have to remember again that, as the Bhagavatam points out in many sections, that this world is just a shadow, like in Brahma Sanya, that Chayivya Jasya Bhuvanani Vibharti Durga, that Durga arranges and maintains, what's that verse? Srishti Stiti Pralaya Sadhana Shakti Reka Chayivya Jasya Bhuvanani Vibharti Durga Ichanu Rupam Api Jasya Chacheshtate Sa. So Maya moves like a shadow, and the worst of this world is often compared to a shadow or reflection. Avasa is a word that's often used for reflection, like rasa avasa, just the reflection of real rasa, or bhakti avasa, and so on. So taking that reflection image, or applying it here, the sort of all the games that go on between husbands and wives in this world, you know, all the little mental things and emotions and, you know, it's your fault, no, but you didn't, you know, it's ananta. So actually, as it goes on in this world, it's just a reflection of the spiritual world, and it's actually a pleasure. It's not based on vanity or bodily concepts. It's based on pure love and all these little games they play. After all, Krishna's playing games with his cowherd boys. Why not with his wives? So they play these sort of these conjugal games. And so it's actually pure love. Anything else? Okay. Use your best courtroom skills here.
March,
Yes.
One more to ask. You were talking about anartha nivritti and, you know,
yes,
bhajana kriya. So, and you were talking about, you know, becoming fire, giving up, you know, the material desires while approaching Krishna.
Right.
And then the second thing happens is decentralization. That means where you see...
Oh, decentering.
Yeah, decentering. Where, you know, you see Krishna as the center and, you know. So this takes a lot of time, and it has a lot of back and forth. And, you know. So in this...
But it has to be like one of those graphs where it's kind of going up, but a jagged line.
So in this, the situation of reversals...
Yes.
You know, we may plan something is going on nicely, and then suddenly some reversals happen. And it really shakes up the mind, and it really shakes up the faith. And
I think the problem is that we've got off on the wrong foot, and so it's like sort of like if you're in a dance and you start on the wrong foot, you're never going to be on the right foot. You know, you have to correct it. So the idea here is that when I'm making my plans, we're like, okay, like today I'm going to do this, and tomorrow, and the next year, and then we're going to. So at the moment of plan making, we should always have a certain sort of Krishna conscious stoicism. We should be thinking, not that I'm going to do that, but yeah, if Krishna wants, I'll do that. Like I always say, like, you know, like someone says, well, you know, see you tomorrow or next week. I'll say, yeah, if the world still exists as we know it, you know, if the laws of nature haven't radically altered. So there has to be a certain detachment. Like, after all, this is just the material world. And anything can happen. And so, or, you know, as they always say, God willing. What do they say? Inshallah. So, you know, God willing. It's a very common saying in all the different languages, something like that. So it's like overconfidence. You know, it's just like in a sporting event. If one team is overconfident, they'll probably lose. And you see that all the time. Like sometimes there's like a martial arts thing and one person's just like, you know, talking and, you know, and just making fun of the opponent. You know that something's going to happen. They say pride comes before a fall. So if you think about it, we set off on different plans with a certain confidence, which is really a pride. Like to say, like, yeah, I'm definitely going to do this next week, or I'm definitely going to achieve that. Like, I'm going to start this business, make a lot of money, or I'm going to have, or my relationships, I'm going to have this fantastic relationship, or whatever. It's like Prabhupada said that during World War II, all the German women went to the church and prayed for their husbands, sons, fathers, uncles, you know, whatever. And then when they didn't come back, they became atheists. But Prabhupada said, you should have consulted with God before you started the war. Otherwise, you're sort of, you know, it's one thing if Krishna offers to be your chariot driver. Another thing to say, okay, Krishna, you know, let's go. Chalo, Govinda. So that confidence we have, like, I'm definitely going to do this or this is going to happen, that's actually pride. It's actually false ego, because if we were thinking of Krishna, we'd remember, well, I'm not really in charge here, but this is what I'd like to do. I'm going to try to do this, but it really depends on what Krishna has in mind. So if we have that pride where we, yeah, it's going to be this, it's not going to be that, I'm going to do this, whatever. So it starts off with the type of foolishness. And if we think, well, just, you know, I'll do my best, I will give it all I've got, I'll do my best. But, you know, that famous verse that all the Hindus know, Karmanyeva Adhikaraste. Mahaphalesha. And of course, there's this amazing thing in India where people think karma yoga means you work hard and give all your money to your wife. These people, I mean, it's like dream on. They really think that they're karma yogis. That's karma. Excuse me, but that's called karma. Karma yoga means you offer it to Krishna. Of course, offering to Krishna. It's like, you know, it's like you buy food and offer it to Krishna, and I don't know of one documented case where the food vanished off the altar. So you get it back. And in other words, using it for Krishna doesn't mean your family starves, but you're very pious. You offer things to Krishna. So if we're really conscious that I just work here, it's like Prabhupada said, if you're in a bank, if you're the, you know, clerk at a bank and money comes in and goes out, you're just, you know, if some guy, some lady's working at a bank, you say, I want to close my account, they may say, like, oh, would you like to talk to someone about it? No? Okay. You know, just fill out this form. So I think we have to examine ma phaleshu kadachana. You never have a right to the fruits. So if you are not claiming the fruits, what's the problem? If it didn't work out, but even if it did work out, I was going to offer that fruit to Krishna. If you wanted the fruit, like, if this works out, I'm going to be happy, people are going to love me, I'll be celebrated, or this or that, or whatever your racket is, then, because if I don't covet the fruits, if I don't get the fruits, it's another whatever. It's a yud-yud. It's just a yud-yud. You know, it's just whatever. So the cause of our suffering is not that this or that happened. That's not why we're suffering. We're suffering because of our attachment. We're suffering because of our attachment. Because you could have, the same thing could have happened if you had no, like let's say, like there's a joke where some guy's speeding, really going like crazy speed, like, you know, over 100 miles an hour, and this cop is behind him, finally pulls him over, finally forces him to stop. And the cop says, "You'd better have a really good explanation." And he said, "Yeah, I do." He said, "You know, last week a cop ran off with my wife." And so the officer said, "Well, I'm sorry to hear that, but why were you speeding?" He said, "Well, I was afraid you wanted to give her back." So... Of course, you could tell the same joke with a woman driver, and, you know, and my husband, you know, you could reverse it very easily. It is reversible. It's gender reversible. But the point is, if we're not attached, then it's like, it's not a big deal. I'm not pro-divorce or anything. These are just jokes. I mean, I actually support, as we all do, the importance of families. I saw this button that said, "Divorce is expensive. Freedom is priceless." Again, I'm not... It's just a joke. I'm not advocating the dissolution of families or anything like that. It's just a joke, but... I'm just using it as an example. If you're not attached, like let's say you have a job and you don't like your job and you found a much better job, you're going to make twice as much money, and then this really nasty boss calls you in and says you're fired, and you have the pleasure of saying, "You can't fire me, I quit." So if you've got a better job, if you've got a much better job, and then this boss you couldn't stand anyway fires you, it's like, make my day. So really the cause of our suffering is our attachment. So we have to back up a few steps and say, was I really doing this for Krishna? Because after all, I mean, let's say, for example, you're cooking for Prabhupada and you really want to cook him some preparation. He doesn't even want to eat it, doesn't like it, doesn't want to eat it. And you get all frustrated and you're miserable because, no, I wanted him to eat that. I wanted to force feed, you know, the acharya. So if you're really doing something for Krishna and he says, "Well, I don't really want that," then what's your problem? If it's really for Krishna and he doesn't want that right now, then isn't it? That's what love means. All you want to know is, you know, what do you want? What can I make for you? What do you like? And then you want to make that. So if Krishna didn't want that particular thing to happen, it has nothing to do with you because you're just the servant.
How do you know whether it's that he doesn't want it or that you're not trying hard enough or smart enough? Or, you know, I mean, you're going to do something, some service, and you're not successful. How do you know that it's just that Krishna didn't want it? Or,
well, if I, for example, if there was an opportunity and I just made a dumb decision or I didn't try hard, or like let's say, for example, I hear that someone wants to give a large donation to ISKCON, and I think, "Oh, that's nice, but, you know, I got tickets for the ball game today, so tell him I'll see him tomorrow." And then you go the next day and he doesn't want to give the money. So it's, I mean, if you were negligent or careless or just foolish or whatever, sure, you can't blame Krishna. But if we've made a serious effort, sincere effort, and then it didn't work out. Yes?
There's a Bengali saying that a man is running with really nice sweet rice or something, and then when he drops it, he says, "Oh, that was for Krishna."
Govinda Bhog.
Govinda Bogue.
Thank you. There's this. How does it go? The same.
The way I heard it, the man was taking a bag of rice home or something. There was a hole in the bag, and it was falling out. And
yeah.
Blowing, or wheat, and it was blowing out into the wind and stuff like that.
The man is.
That's my offering.
The man is running with the food. He's thinking, oh, this is going to taste so good. I can't wait to eat this. But then as soon as he drops it, ah, oh, that was for Krishna.
Yeah, we have to have the right intention. We have to have the right intention. And so we take seriously the Krishna statement, karmani evadikaraste, ma phaleshu kadachana. Ma karma phala hetu urbur. Don't be motivated by the fruit. Don't be motivated, which is translated, you know, don't be the cause of action, but what it really means is don't be motivated. Hetu there means a cause in the sense of a psychological cause, a motive. So the idea is don't be motivated by the fruit, and mate sangosto karmani, and don't be attached to inaction. In other words, oh, I was going to do this service, but I can't enjoy the fruit. Well, never mind. Like, why bother? Because I can't enjoy the fruit. It's for Krishna. Well, that's kind of like the story you told. It's the last line that ma te sangos to karmi. Don't have attachment to inaction. That, well, I couldn't enjoy it anyway, so I don't care. It has to be for Krishna. What's best for Krishna? As I like to say, the right answer to the wrong question is the wrong answer. So what's the right question? The right question is, what will please Krishna? That's the right question. And if you're asking some other question, like, oh, let's say someone's, let's give an example. Someone wants to marry some beautiful lady, or the lady wants to marry some guy that she thinks is whatever. And, you know, then they get married and actually get to know each other, which is often far less romantic. But anyway, so let's say, so if someone wants to marry someone, that's a devotional service. Like, you know, to marry, marriage is also a devotional service. So if Krishna doesn't want you to do that particular devotional service, it's like Krishna saying, I don't want that particular preparation. I just don't want to eat that rice. So it's like, why do you care? If you're the cook, whether you cook this for Krishna or that for Krishna, it's like whatever Krishna wants to eat. Whatever Prabhupada or the Guru or the Vaishnavas want to eat, why should you care? Because if your goal is their satisfaction. No, I wanted to satisfy you with this other subji. I'm not happy that you're satisfied with this. I wanted to say, what's that about? So in the same way, if we have personal attachment, then we get, you know, frustrated, angry, bewildered. So we have to sort of, you know, do a diagnostic on our motives. Like, what am I really about? What am I really after? Why am I doing this? Devotees have to be introspective. What's my real motive in doing this? If my real motive is some type of personal satisfaction, then if things don't go well, I'll become stupid about it. And if things go well, I'll become stupid about it. Yes? Oh, microphone, you're on the air?
But is it possible to change course? Like you were saying, you know, it's possible to a lot of times to start something on the wrong foot, but within that course, is it possible to change?
Yeah, if you change your motivation. Like a good example, that again is the Dhruva story. Dhruva went to Krishna to get a kingdom back. To get a better kingdom than his father. And when he saw Krishna, he had this big whoops moment. Because he saw Krishna and he realized that was pretty dumb. Like going to Krishna for some, like to get a big kingdom. That was a pretty dumb thing to do. In fact, in the Bhagavatam, the story is being narrated. I think Shuka's narrating the story, and he says that actually Krishna, that Dhruva, after he saw Krishna, was not happy. And so then the question is, well, why wasn't he happy after he saw Krishna? And the answer, of course, is because he was ashamed of what he had done. He was ashamed of what he had done. And so there's a radical shift of motive. But of course, Krishna told him, well, you can keep the grand prize anyway, because Because you wanted it at one point, so, you know, I don't want you to have any renouncer's remorse. That's actually a big thing, isn't it? Renouncer's remorse. Yes.
Maharaj, in the life of Srila Prabhupada, there were so many reversals, like from his family life, from the devotee of League in Jhansi, then within ISKCON. I wanted to like know, you know, how Prabhupada went through these reversals.
Well, I think Prabhupada had the right motives. He was trying to serve Krishna. He felt it, of course. I mean, there's that great poem he wrote, was it Vrindavan Bhajan, where he says he's sitting there in Vrindavan just after taking sannyas. And he said, I had this big family, now it's just a list of names. And he said, but I sit here and I laugh. We have to remember Krishna. For example, I have a little place down in L.A. And it's in a building where my parents lived. And, it's a very nice, beautiful place there. And we had so many family things. Or even as a devotee, I'd go show up, just to... You have to be nice about these things. And so we had so many family events there, and it's a big place, and there were all kinds of relatives. And now so many of them passed away. So many of them are gone now. And so I had to go up there the other day just to get something. And I really, you could really feel that. Like here was a place where there were so many family members and everyone having a good time and talking and everything and exchanging affection. Now so many are gone. Everything's changed. And then the next moment I thought, but wait a second. These aren't my relatives. These are Krishna's souls. I grew up with three brothers, and the youngest one passed away in 1993, actually, just after I began at Harvard. The youngest one passed away, and so if I thought my brother passed away, of course it was disturbing. But then I thought, no, it's Krishna's child. So the my, it's like I'm a maham, aham mama. It's the my. If you think my mother, my father, my wife, my husband, my children, then you are, as they say, cruising for a bruising. But. But if just switch the possessive pronoun, and no, it's Krishna's. These are Krishna's souls. I give the examples like when you're a kid, if you're playing with your friends, and then your mother calls you to come home for dinner, and your friends would say, "No, you can't leave right in the middle of the game." But the parents have a right to call their children. So in the same way, we may think we have children, we're just babysitting. It's like, imagine the babysitter kind of, goes a little loopy in the head and thinks, no, and the parents come back and say, no, these are my kids. It's like, okay, wait, just wait right there while I call 911. So, isn't it? I mean, that's pretty loopy. Imagine you hire a babysitter and then you come home and the babysitter thinks, no, they're my children, you can't take them. So we may be babysitting some of Krishna's children, but if he wants to take them home, you can't say, no, they're my children. They're Krishna's children. The father or the mother can take their children when they want. No one can stop them. No one should say, no, don't take your children. So it's a question of just seeing things in the right way. Question of seeing things properly.
In the translation in this verse, it's comparing the queens of Krishna, that they're not aware of the extent of his glories, just like the atheists are not aware.
Well, the word, it doesn't literally say atheist. I mean, that's sort of Prabhupada, actually following Bhakti Siddhanta did it also, it often put the purports in the translation. Or that, in other words, that's one way to look at it. It's like Prabhupada used to say that if you give Bhagavatam class every day, he said new lights. There'll be new lights every day. So that's one way to understand this. But of course, the word also can mean something else. So it's not, the queens are not really Yeah. I mean, as I said, mati means opinion or thought or view, and then this is a plural, matayo.
My question is, if even the queens don't really know Krishna, then who does know Krishna? Can any?
But again, they don't know the Ishwara. What it's again, look at the whole line, that last line. It's they didn't know him as Ishwara. That's the analogy. And as we know, Yogamaya increases devotion, because if you're always seeing Krishna as Ishwara, you can't really get to a point of intimacy. You can't really get to a point of intimacy if you... I mean, imagine if a woman marries a guy who's a judge, and every time he comes home, she says, "Here comes the judge." I mean, if she says, and he says, "No, don't call me judge. Yes, Your Honor." So Yoga Maya and Mahamaya do the opposite. Mahamaya covers our understanding of Krishna, whereas Yoga Maya, by apparently making us forget one thing, actually leads us to a higher understanding of Krishna. You could never get to that, because Krishna ultimately, I mean, he is Ishwara, but that's just kind of when he does at the office. And he doesn't bring his work home with him, you know, in Vrindavan. So actually Krishna, because ultimately it's not that, you know, the Lord, the Ishwara, is playing like a cowherd boy. It's actually the opposite. The cowherd boy is playing like the Lord. Because people who are fallen in this material world, they need, quote unquote, the god of religion. And in the spiritual world, there is no religion. I mean, it's not that people go to a mandir or a church or something and they all chant hymns or something. They are mantras. They're just playing with Krishna. And so the formalities of religion and the formalities in between the worshiper and the worshipped, that's the those are like the formalities in a hospital. It's like when you go to a hospital, you know, you got to go for this test, you got to take this medicine and this and that. And then once you're healthy, you don't have to follow those things. So we follow all these formalities. And Krishna says that in the Gita. He says that Atmarati, one who is taking pleasure in the self, there's no duty. But then again, that person will perform certain duties just to set a good example. So, there it is. So the queens, it's like Krishna closing his mouth after showing the Vishwarupa, the universal form, to Yashoda. So Yogamaya's purpose is to increase the love of Krishna and to increase the real penetration into the nature of Krishna, because ultimately Krishna is that pure loving soul. He's not just God who plays like Krishna. It's Krishna playing like Ishwara. Yes.
So in the sense of this resolution of paradoxes that is both duality and non-duality at the same time, is this saying then that the way to know the Ishvara is through the person? The best way to get to the universal form is through the personal form. Not just that you have a relationship with the personal form, but by having a relationship with the personal form, you have a more intimate relationship with the universal form, with Ishvara.
Well, we need, in our present state, you know, down here on the Mahatattva funny farm, we need to worship Krishna. We need to worship Krishna as Ishwara, because we tend to think that we're the Ishwara. In fact, in the chapter 16 of the Gita, when Krishna says that hilarious soliloquy of what the demon is thinking, and the first thing the demon thinks is Ishwaroham. I am the Lord. Aham Bhogi. I am the enjoyer. Ishwaroham. So, because instead of thinking Krishna Dasoham, I'm servant of God, we tend to think Ishwaroham, I'm the Lord. That's why we have anger management problems, because you did not do my bidding. And so, or damn, or I didn't do it right. So we really have this Ishwara complex. And that's what it means to be a conditioned soul. And therefore, we need to worship Krishna as Ishwara to get over it. And then, of course, once we get over it, then all these higher relationships are open up to us. But if we prematurely stop worshiping God as an Ishvara, we're not really going to flush out our own nutty little syndrome that's going on. Yes.
Actually, just there is a similar to like in the form of the spirit soul when it is said in the Katha Upanishad and all, it says that 1/10,000 part of the hair. Mm. But at the last sloka, it says kalpate. Means, does it that it is just an imagination, it says? Or
one imagines. Also, at the end of there's two verses, probably quotes, and then one of them says sukshma sharupa, which is the subtle form.
What are you quoting from?
Oh, that verse, 1/10,000, the tip of a hair. Yeah, what is that? Shatada kalpitasya cha.
Imagine like the Paramatma and Atma is an imagine because...
That is a subtle form. It's also called Sukshma, Swarupa, the subtle form. In other words, it's just like in a seed, a giant tree is subtly present in the tree, in the seed. And so, in a sense you could say, well, if a soul comes to this material world, what do you do with your spiritual body? It's like, do they have just some... like big closet up in Vaikuntha, and you sort of hang it up there until you get back, like an astronaut uniform or something. And Ramanuja, the great Ramanuja, speaks about this in his Vedanta commentary, in which he says that your spiritual body is it's already there. It's not that, you know, when the word gets out in Vaikuntha that you're coming back home, they kind of, you know, put an order in. Okay, I need a cowherd boy body and... three gopis and seven cows and two vatsalya rasa, one feminine, one masculine. And then they just... So as Ramanuja points out, the spiritual body is already there. As the Chaitanya Charitamrita says, Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema Sadhya Kabunai. That your love for Krishna is already there. It's just been forgotten. You have to revive it. You have to reawaken it. So it's not that we really are just these little 1/10,000th tip of a hair, because like, ooh, is that what I am? You know, that's not like the ultimate self-realization, like, oh, that's really neat. I get to be 1/10,000th tip of a hair. Maybe if I like, you know, if I merge into, you know, millions of other souls, we can actually have a hairdo. So the idea is that that's called sukshma, the subtle form, and the actual spiritual body is there. It just has to be revived, and then it manifests again. It's not prakata. It's not manifest for a conditioned soul, but it's there in a subtle form. So it's like, kind of like the seed of the yes. The good news is, in the spiritual world, you are your body. You know, you'll never have to hear that again. You're not your body.
This discussion of the spiritual form already existing in the spiritual world reminds me of the sort of the perennial controversy about was the soul ever in the spiritual world before it was in the material world? And
yeah.
What is your comment, if anything, on that whole controversy?
Well, the Bhagavatam, which is our most important shastra, only explicitly talks about this once. In the fourth canto, at the end of the Puranjana story. And twice, Krishna, you know, the man, twice Krishna says that you rejected me and came to this world. You left me and came to this world. So that's what Krishna says. Of course, that's just Krishna. And not to be compared in authority with, you know, certain wannabe theologians. So that's what Krishna says. In fact, what Krishna says to the soul, in that Puranjana story, Krishna comes in the form of a Brahmana and says to the fallen soul, Api smarasi mam, do you remember me? How can you remember something you never knew? Like I could say to you, remember that time you went to Guatemala? He said, I never went to Guatemala. Never mind that, but remember that time that, remember what? So I think we have to, I don't know. Some people just seem like are so enthusiastic to prove that I was never with Krishna because they think, well, if I was with Krishna, I think the hang up for certain people, and I think that's all it is. It's just sort of they can't quite grasp a simple point. And the argument is always, well, if I was with Krishna, if I was in the spiritual world and so perfect there, why would I ever come here? And it seems to me the flaw in that thinking is that it's based on a deterministic view of behavior. In other words, given certain conditions, a person must and will act in a certain way. And if you think about what are the consequences? If I'm in the spiritual world just because I'm having so much fun, is that like the real reason to be there? Because it's so enjoyable. And Prabhupada himself gave the example of the hippies who left, you know, rich parents, big houses for the honor and pleasure of sleeping on a filthy park bench or something. And so people, what Prabhupada always emphasized is that you always have your free will. And people, can you say in your own life that I always did what I knew was best? I never consciously did anything but what I absolutely knew to be the best for me. Who can say that? I mean, we're going to serve out a feast later today and you'll have a chance to re-experience the fall. Yeah, but so the idea that people will never act against their self-interest, it seems it goes against all of our experience. Now, if I'm in the spiritual world and Krishna's so beautiful and everything's so nice, but I still have a little bit of desire to be numero uno, you know, I sort of have that impulse, I want to be a big fish in a little pond, then if I have that, if I want that, then the fact that everything's perfect, well, that's nice, but I want to go into business for myself. So, yeah, it's not the truth. Behavior, even of this pure soul, is not deterministic. The whole movement of existentialist philosophy arose actually in response to this, because with Freud, when Freud, who had a lot of good ideas, he's like Marx, had a lot of good ideas and a lot of stupidity because of his hostility toward the most important things in the world, like God and the soul. So Freud, when he sort of made this breakthrough that there's a science of consciousness or psychology, it really had almost a similar impact to Newton's discoveries with Leibniz. We should always remember Leibniz. It almost had a similar impact in the sense that people realized, oh my God, we live in a rational universe, that things happen for a reason. And so Freud was almost like the Newton of psychology in the sense of presenting a rational picture of feelings, emotions, and states of mind and so on. And people got so much into it, just like they were so enthusiastic about Newton, people became so enthusiastic about this science of the mind in the sense of a deterministic, a deterministic science. Like, let's say if you're on the surface of the earth and there are no extraordinary circumstances prevailing, if you drop an object, it will fall down and not up. Again, barring any extraordinary circumstances, which would tend to counteract the natural force of gravity. So that's determinism. Like if you, you know, take an apple and drop it, the apple doesn't think, what do I want to do in this situation? Like, well, I think I'll go sideways this time because, you know, I've dropped so many times and been there, done that. So the idea is that given the laws of nature acting in a certain way, and given that there are no other extraordinary circumstances which circumvent or counteract those laws of nature, then things must happen. Things must take place in a certain way. And so there was this idea that you can reduce human consciousness, behavior, emotions to the same type of deterministic model. So that, for example, people use this all the time. This is absolutely like an essential doctrine for people who relish one of the highest pleasures actually of this age, and that is believing oneself to be a victim of injustice. And so, I mean, there is injustice in the world, but really getting into that, where that becomes kind of like your, you know, meditation, like that's what my life's about. It's about relishing victimhood. And people in this condition even, you know, say things like let's say someone is rude to you, and you say, excuse me, I think that was inappropriate. You say, yeah, but you don't understand what I've been through. In other words, because I've been through certain things, I have no choice but to be rude to you. It's determined. It's almost like, let's say you're walking in a group of people and someone pushes you from behind and you fall forward into someone else. And you could say, you know, someone pushed me. Like that great bumper sticker, Humpty Dumpty was pushed. Anyway, so if someone pushes you, that's an example of a deterministic sequence of events. Someone pushes you, you fall forward, and you bump into someone else. You are actually guiltless. You were pushed. And so people want to use the physical model of determinism, but apply it to human psychology and say that, yeah, sure, maybe I treated you a certain way, but what do you expect? Look what I've been through. You don't understand my childhood. You don't understand what I've just been through. So that given a certain set of circumstances, I cannot do otherwise but be obnoxious, or their other words are even stronger. So I have no choice but to, and so they take shelter of this psychological determinism. So anyway, so there was a reaction against Freud to say that was the whole existentialist movement. No, you still have free will. You still have a responsibility to behave properly. Whatever you've been through, you still have a responsibility to behave properly, treat other people properly. It's like, for example, if I was a victim of racism, then I have a right to be a racist and to be prejudiced against people of a certain race, because historically my group was oppressed, and therefore I'm angry. I'm really angry. I'm really mad about it, and therefore I have a right to be angry at absolutely innocent people who simply happen to share the same body type as people who historically oppressed my people, or I had a bad experience in the past. And so that idea that because I had a bad experience with a certain person, I have a right to hate, to be angry at, to behave inappropriately toward people that have the same kind of body. So that victims of oppression have a right to be racist. Anyway, it's...
Dhruva Maharaj also, I think, when his brother was
Guru
killed...
Maharaj?
When his brother was killed in the jungle,
yes.
Also he took the revenge to all the yaksha, and then Kubera came.
Point.
So how it was?
Yeah, actually, I read that story very closely because I was working on it, and technically, it's true that Sadhik Swayambhuva came, his grandfather, and said, whoa. But technically, if you study the battle scene, they fired first. It's interesting because Dhruva... It happened in this order. Dhruva, he came there, blew his conch shell, and literally scared the you-know-what out of the people. And then he fired arrows. And then they attacked him. He actually just showed up there at Alakapur, the city of the Yakshas. And then he just sort of, you know, his calling card, he blew his conch shell, which was, you know, it was a military gesture. But it was just a gesture. It wasn't an attack. It meant to say that I'm very serious and I'm armed. And he wanted them to, you know, turn in the people, as they should have, who killed his brother. They responded to him coming there by attacking him. He didn't attack them. They responded by attacking. They've shot first. Then, after they attacked him, he responded again by hitting all the enemies with three arrows, but they weren't lethal. They were just like a warning shot over the bow. You know, it was a warning shot. So first he just showed up and said, I'm here. They attacked him. He responded by firing warning shots. They again attacked him. At this point, he said, okay, let's do it. And but he actually, so it was like three strikes, you're out. They attacked once. He just, you know, so. But then at a certain point, I mean, technically, it was a Dharma Yuddha. Technically, it was a battle. But then the elders came and said that, come on, I mean, this is a mismatch. You're just slaughtering these people. And don't use Dharma Yuddha as a pretext, you know, righteous battle, because you're really just slaughtering them. And also, it almost like, I remember years ago when Iran and Iraq had a war, and Iran started throwing, you know, just young soldiers, just, you know, like kids and teenagers into the front lines because they had no one else. And so at a certain point, sort of like, you know, they emptied out the military academy and all the young people got into the fight, the yakshas. And so then the elders intervened and said, okay. Like they called off. It's like, you know, it's like in boxing or mixed martial arts at a certain point, you know. Like the person may not tap out, but the referee just stops it. I mean. So in a sense, that's what Saimbhuva did. He called off the fight because the opponent was, in a sense, unable to defend himself, the enemy. So they just called it off. And then of course he preached him and said those things you're saying. But I just wanted to mention that Dhruva did actually twice give them a chance to be reasonable and talk about it, and both times they just attacked him.
Thank you for the insight, Maharaj.
So, if there's no other questions, yes, there are. There's another question.
So this is a different topic, Maharaj. Maharaj, in the fifth chapter, Krishna says, Sankhya Yoga, Prithak Bala, Pravadantina Pandita. That verse, I'm always confused. So
it just means philosophy and practice. Is there more water, anyone? Is there water in the house? Vegetarian water? Oh. Sankhya and yoga are just sort of Sanskrit jargon meaning like theory and practice. Not theory, but philosophy and practice. And the idea is that what Krishna is saying is if you really practice well, if you practice really well, you'll understand the philosophy. And if you really embrace the philosophy, it will lead you to the practice. So the philosophy and practice are just sort of two facets of Krishna consciousness. And that's why Bala, literally children, the childish, like the immature, they say that they're prithak, they're different. Ikmapi asitak samyag, if you've practiced one really well, you'll get the benefit of both.
But why, Arjuna asked, you know, about renunciation. You know, first you say I should renounce action, then you say I should act in yoga. And then Krishna starts talking about philosophy and practice, Sankhya, rather than sannyas.
Well, first of all, Arjuna kind of misrepresented what Krishna said. And that's what Krishna says. Krishna says, no, I don't think you got that right. Because Krishna never told him just renounce all actions. He said that give up the fruits of action. Arjuna was sort of, falling into the typical misunderstanding. Like people think, oh, if I join the Krishna conscious movement, what about my family? What about my job? Isn't it? And so they just have like this sort of this pop understanding or misunderstanding of what spiritual life is. Like I can't get serious about spiritual life because I have a family, I have a job, I still have material things to do. They don't get it. That's why Krishna explains. No, it means do everything for Krishna.
What's the relation between the sannyas, the Arjuna asks a question about sannyas and Krishna responds about Sankhya?
I take a look at the Gita to get the exact train of thought there. We have a Gita in the house? Oh, fine print, that's the eye buster. Do we have a bigger one? Let's see. Quoting from the good book here. First Krishna talks in two verses about sannyas. Arjuna, sannyasam karmanam Krishna, the renunciation of actions, Krishna, punar, and again, yogam cha shangsi. You praise the renunciation of actions, and again you praise yoga, which is active, of course. So, yachayita yorekam, tangme bruhi sunishitam, tell me definitely which one is better. Literally what it means. Tell me definitely which one is better. And then Krishna says, he does talk about sannyas. He doesn't just, he says, Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, sannyasa karma yoga cha nikshayasa karavu bhau. Both sannyas and karma yoga produce the, you know, highest benefit. Shreyas means like welfare, benefit. And then nikshayas means that there's nothing greater. So it's like, he said both sannyas and karma yoga produce the nothing greater. In other words, the highest benefit. And however of the two, karma sannyasat, karma yoga vishishate, karma yoga is better than karma sannyasa. In other words, practicing actions is better than giving them up. In other words, let's say someone is just a materialist and they're, you know, just engaged in sinful activity, consumerism, just all these, you know, sort of like mindless activities. And then they think, no, they embrace this cutting edge trend of voluntary simplification of life. And they want to live very simply and just, you know, have a very simple life, austere. Yeah, that's better. Better than being a mindless materialist is just to kind of, you know, calm down and just have a simple life. But better than that is to do the right thing. Because the word, and actually it's, it's not just because, like, take the word nirvana. Buddhism has been actually, well, in terms of, has been sort of philosophically plagued for thousands of years by a simple grammatical fact. And that is that the ultimate goal of Buddhism is expressed by a word which is grammatically negative, nirvana. Nirvana means novana. Sorry, novana today. So, yes, we have novana. Yes, we have novana. Anyway, so nir, N-I-R, is a negative prefix in Sanskrit. It means without, like nishkarma. Anyway, it changes the last consonant in different phonetic environments, but it means without. It means without. So, nirvana. So if you say the ultimate goal is not to have this, okay, and it's to have what? And they're still debating that. You know, 2,500 years later, the jury's not in yet. So, vana, current, like for example, from the word like when it says the wind blows, vayurvati, the wind blows. So it's like sort of moving like that in a current or in a wave, or it can be the flow of a river. It's like the current of material existence, samsara, the samsara current, births and deaths. So you stop that, nirvana. Interestingly, Krishna speaks positively in the Gita of Brahma Nirvana. So you have a negative and a positive. It's balanced. You have the nirvana, but you have the positive Brahma. So you get rid of that and you embrace the other thing. So again, giving up bad activities is nice, but then what do you do? Then what do you do? And even if you look closely at the word sannyasa, it really, just even the word linguistically really is not negative. And so that's why to define sannyasa as giving something up is really not even to understand the word perfectly. Because asa means placing, and ni, placing within, like placing something in the right place is nyasa. That's why when, like, let's say you put tilak on, it's in the old Sanskrit terminology, is called nyasa. Right? Like, you know, those rituals, you put a kavacha on yourself, you know, get all suited up in your kavacha, or put tilak on, or all these things, it's called nyasa, like placing the Lord's names on your body. It's called nyasa. And sung just means like perfectly or completely. So karma sannyasa literally means to take actions and put them all exactly in the right place. That's what it literally means. at least the roots of the word. So where, what do you do with actions? Where should they go? They should go to Krishna. And so Krishna is here kind of using the popular notion of sannyas, of giving something up. It's like when someone takes sannyas, you're not simply giving up a lot of bills. You're not simply giving up, you know, family life. But you're supposed to be placing your energy, your attention, your devotion in something positive, namely the mission, Krishna's mission on earth. So ultimately it's... So anyway, then he says that. And then Krishna goes on to say, Gayaksa nitya sannyasi jona dveshi nakankshati. That person is to be known as always a sannyasi, the one who does not hate or hanker. Nir dvandvo. The nir, right? Without duality, nir dvandvo. He mahabaho mariyarnvon sukham bandhat. Happily, he's liberated from bondage. Sukham bandhat pramuchate. So Krishna does actually talk a bit about sannyas. There's also that verse, which chapters, where Krishna says, nahi sannyasanad eva siddhin samadigachati. One cannot achieve perfection. Yeah, one cannot achieve perfection simply by giving things up. Nahi sannyasanad eva. What verse is that?
3:4, I think.
Okay. You're like me, you're a Gita thumper. Yeah, na karmanang anarambhat. It is not that by not undertaking actions, naishkarmya, a person enjoys naishkarmya. It's almost like a paradoxical statement, because naishkarmya, the same root nir, N-I-R, before a K becomes nish. So nishkarma means without karma. And so Krishna is saying that you cannot achieve a life without karma simply by not doing karma. So it's a very interesting statement. Not simply by not undertaking karmas, actions, can you achieve the state without karma, without actions. Not just sannyasa, even nor by sannyasa alone does one achieve perfection. So that's in chapter 3. So again, Arjuna's saying, well, Krishna, you told me to give everything up. It's like, wait a second, that's not what I said. So Arjuna, that happens with us all the time. We'll be explaining Krishna consciousness to someone, and they don't really hear what we said. They'll just bring up some stereotypical objection, which is not what we said, isn't it? And so that's the case here.
Stop now and have Guru Puja.
Okay. I'd like to thank everybody for coming, making me look good on the, what do you call the webcam, right? Because it was an empty room.
His Holiness Sri Dayananda Maharaj.
Jai.